of the Living Geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podcastica, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Night of the Living Geeks Network. My name is John, and joining me, as always, is my good friend Taylor. Taylor, how are you?
I'm pretty well. Overall, life is continuing to be busy. Thank you, work. my bus is still for sale, and... And oh boy, haven't we gotten a couple of sucker punches over the past couple of weeks?
Yes, have we? It's I almost wish our schedule had us recording a week later than we usually do, because yeah. We would have at least been able to cover one of the Who newsies.
Oh, let's not cover newsies. I've seen that. Let's not cover newsies.
Oh, fine.
Okay.
So Who news though? And there is so much of it.
Oh, good heavens. Isn't there?
I guess the first punch we got was, Stephen Moffat is out after season 10 as showrunner, which a bunch of people are happy about. And some people are, I guess, indifferent about. And then I can't remember, what is his first name? Chibnall's first name?
Chris Chibnall,
who runs, I believe it's Broadchurch.
Yes.
He is coming in as showrunner after Moffat. Now, I guess...
And the nice thing is, if I remember right, Chibnall has written for Doctor Who before, because I recognize his name.
Yes, he has. I'm just not sure what episodes. I think it's a couple.
It's a couple or a few. I can try and look it up real quick. One thing that I'm actually treating as hopeful with Chris Chibnall coming on. Now, granted, it won't be for a little while, but he actually, as a young kid, took part in a competition to write a theme song for Doctor Who.
Did he?
He did.
That's funny.
Now, it's not set to the music that is the intro to Doctor Who, because I don't know how on earth you would ever put lyrics to that.
Yeah.
But I think it was Nerdist had a pretty good covering, because it actually listed out the lyrics. And the guy who wrote the article said, well, I tried to sing it kind of like maybe you would sing like a sea shanty or something, and it kind of worked.
Oh, that's funny. I'm seeing that he's a longtime Doctor Who fan. And
that's always a good thing.
He... appeared on a BBC program in 1986 as a representative of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society.
Oh, I belonged to that for a short while.
Did you really?
I did indeed.
That's great. Well, there you go.
I totally did back in the day. I used to get their, I think it was a quarterly newsletter.
Huh.
It's one of those things where I literally had to convince someone in my family to give it to me as a Christmas gift, because they literally had to send, there was no PayPal, there was no internet. You literally had to send money away to England to make this happen and cover international postage.
So I'm looking at his Doctor Who credits. He wrote Hungry Earth and Cold Blood.
Okay.
Which reintroduced the Silurians. And he also wrote Dinosaurs on a Spaceship and The Power of Three.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And he wrote a bunch of Torchwood, like 2, 4, 6, 8 episodes of Torchwood.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like Torchwood, so I'll give that a thumbs up.
Torchwood, you know, man, I don't even know if I want to dwell back into Torchwood. That could be something we could do, because the actual next announcement was there will be no new Doctor Who episodes this year until Christmas, which is just heartbreaking.
it ruined my day.
Yeah, it ruined. I was furious. And I think a lot of...
You were furious about a few things that day, I think.
I was,
and that just added to it.
I was fired up, as we say. But this was because I think I was mainly fired up because most of the friends who were like, yay, Stephen Moffat's gone, that's great, don't watch the show anymore and don't care that me, a person who loves the show, has to wait an entire year until we get new episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of the people, and I feel very strongly about this, who vilify Moffat. Now, I'll admit, I'm not his greatest fan either. They're neglecting a lot of the really cool things that he has done.
Yeah,
both with canon and the storytelling, and some of the creatures and stuff that he's created. A lot of people are looking past that and are not appreciating that much.
Agreed. I mean, he made basically Big Finish canon, which yep. is amazing. He created the Silence. He created the Weeping Angels. He created a lot of cool stuff with who. He basically made it canon that Time Lords can regenerate into men or women.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, yes, maybe he didn't treat Clara right in maybe one season. Maybe he just doesn't write women very well, which is one of his downfalls in the Doctor Who community. He didn't hire any women writers, I think, at all, except for maybe like one or two. So, yeah, I can see where some people are coming from. But at the same time, he's done some good things for the fandom. And when he was in charge, it was at its highest. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're spot on with that, and yeah, I've seen that complaint as well, that he doesn't write women all that well, and seeing as how one of his other series, Coupling, all it was, the entire show was just about relationships and relationship foibles and failed relationships and stuff, you would think that he would be able to write women better, but
yes.
Be that as it may.
Yeah, so that's the first bit of news, is Moffat's out, and then we don't have Doctor Who until Christmas. And then after that, I don't think we get season 10 until, I want to say, spring.
I've seen the word spring thrown about. That could mean, you know, as early as the beginning of March, really.
Yeah, so that was the first punch in the gut, and then if we were still, you know, hurting from that punch, we got kicked in the face with all of Doctor Who being removed from Netflix and Hulu today. Literally today. We're recording this at 7, and I believe it's actually been removed now.
Oh, really? It's not even waiting till midnight?
I mean, it said when I went to go watch The Time Meddler, which we will get to, it said mm-hmm. I had 7 hours left. That's when it expired.
And what time were you watching it?
I watched it at, I want to say, 3 or 4.
Well, that would have put it
five,
at about 11 o'clock.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, I guess midnight. So it's still on there, but you won't even get to.
You're not going
to
hear this
no.
until
Tuesday. Yeah. So.
Timey wimey.
Yeah.
That just crushed me. That just absolutely crushed me this week. I instantly panicked and was like, oh my God, we are truly in the wilderness here. We have got now, at least the way that I was perceiving it, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
For the next 10 months.
Nothing. Not a thing. And I guess the BBC they're not even sure if they're going to, we don't know if Doctor Who's streaming anywhere. We don't know. They haven't made an announcement. They say they're going to have a streaming for BBC, but the Nerdist said that that's not even going to be, Doctor Who's not even included on that. So BBC are making it really hard for everyone right now.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And as somebody who, went through the original wilderness years after the show was canceled in 89. It just, for me, it feels like all of a sudden, like the BBC is just being like, you know, just very uncaring about the fans, mm-hmm. and just kind of doing whatever they want with it. I'm sure they have a rhyme and a reason to it. I have no idea what it is. Maybe it's a poorly written limerick. I'm not sure. but I really hope that very soon we kind of get an expectation of the future for Doctor Who streaming, because it's not just us and for the purposes of the show that we're unable to get a stream of Doctor Who. There's all of fandom. If you don't own the DVDs, or if you don't have the episodes in some format, you know, locally, you can't stream it.
Yeah.
And that does the show a real disservice.
And it does it a real disservice because sometimes maybe you're at a friend's house and it's like, what should we watch? And it's like, oh, have you ever watched Doctor Who? And now you can't do that. You can't show mm-hmm. somebody the show unless you have it locally, like you said. And I mean, some of us may have them.
I'm happy to say that you do actually possess a lot of episodes, and so we will still be able to review stuff going forward.
Yeah, we'll be fine. I have every classic episode that I think has been released. I think maybe they released some new older ones that they found, and I might not have those, but I'm pretty up to date. But BBC needs to figure out what they're doing, because I will gladly give them money monthly for a Doctor Who. If Doctor Who's on the BBC streaming, I will gladly give them money, because the only reason me and about 15 of my friends have Hulu Plus is because of the Doctor Who classics. And now I don't have a reason to have that. And it's just very disappointing. So we can only hope that I'm going to release this episode on Tuesday. We can only hope by now they've made an announcement letting us know what they're actually going to do with Doctor Who streaming wise, because
Yeah, totally.
That's really all I can think to say is yeah. So we are indeed in the wilderness months, I guess. It's not really a full year, but might as well be.
Just be here to say the wilderness year.
Yeah, the wilderness year, which is bleh. So, you have an article here. Did you want to talk about the article?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Last week, I just Google News does this, you know, suggested for you. So, you know, stuff that you've kind of indicated that you're interested in, it will find articles and kind of pull them together. And obviously one of them is Doctor Who, along with many other things. And this story comes from the Radio Times, and it's about somebody who was at home catching up on Doctor Who. They were watching, I think it was The Impossible Planet, in which the silence is introduced. And It's very interesting to read, because this person is watching the episode and they're getting to a scene that's, you know, in a house and down in the basement. I think that, like, I don't know if I can't remember, the silence are hiding out down there or just what. I didn't go actually look up the actual scene, so I'm doing this from memory. But this person's watching it and it's like, God, this neighborhood looks familiar. Gosh, I actually recognize the street names. The only way they could get that angle is if, oh, wait, they had to have filmed that in my house.
That's amazing.
Yeah, right?
That's really
cool. How cool is that? You can now be like, hey, everybody come over to my Doctor Who pad.
Yeah, that's super cool. So I assume this person had just recently purchased this house.
I guess so. I mean, obviously in the time between the airing of that episode and now.
That's so weird. But super cool. So I'll post that article in the show notes. And so this week, for the last time ever on Hulu, we watched The Time Meddler, which was a First Doctor serial. And it starred William Hartnell as the Doctor, Maureen O'Brien as Vicky Pallister. Peter
Pallister.
Peter Pervs?
Yeah, why not? P-U-R-V-E-S, Pervs.
Peter Pervs.
It sounds wrong, but I think that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah, as Steven Taylor and Peter Butterworth as the monk. It was directed by Dennis Spooner. No, it was written by Dennis Spooner and directed by Douglas Camfield. And it first aired July 3rd to July 24th of 1965.
That's right.
And it is the ninth and final story of season two. And Taylor, you have a synopsis for us.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually kind of had to work on this one a little bit because, again, with Classic Who, you really don't know what's going on until like the last couple of stories. So the Doctor and his crew land in 1066 and soon find an unusual monk with really unusual tech and a plan.
That is perfect. I mean, it makes that's pretty much. And I think, and I can't remember if I have ever told this story. When I had acquired all of the Classic Who's, I started watching some of them, and there is actually I believe it's a First Doctor serial called Marco Polo. And
yes,
it's eight parts long, and they don't have all of it. I think it's like some of it they have. They have like the audio. It's so weird. I don't understand it completely. And I started watching it with the audio and just still pictures. And I was like, this is kind of boring. I wonder what the story is about. And I looked it up, and the synopsis and plot was for a 4.5 hour Doctor Who story was two paragraphs. And I went, yeah, this is ridiculous.
Wow.
And I was like, what is happening right now? So, yeah, this is our first William Hartnell story, correct?
It totally is. Yeah, it's probably the first William Hartnell episode I've watched in, God, probably 25 to 30 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I probably more like 25, because 30 years ago, I only would have been 9, almost 10 years old. So probably closer to 25.
Wow. That is a long while ago. I think this is the first one I've watched since, I think, the first Dalek episode.
Which, oh, wow, okay.
So, I mean, and the last time I watched a solo William Hartnell was, I want to say, 2 years ago.
Okay, so obviously more recently than me.
Yes. Well, I mean, it would have to be more recently for me because I haven't been watching forever, so.
Oh, that's right.
True. So I guess we pick up where Ian and Barbara have just left the TARDIS.
Yeah, I did not know that was the order of things, but that kind of caught me by surprise.
And I did like how, and I don't have this written down, I like that the Doctor kind of took time with Vicky to be like, hey, I know things kind of got crazy, but are you sure you want to stay?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no, I'm good. I made my decision. And he was just, you know, double checking with her. I like that because usually Hartnell's kind of seen as like a crotchety old man who's just like, whatever. And I just liked that connection he had with her, or at least tried to make with her at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, no, I think that kind of checking in really was very good, because I, you know, have had that same kind of vision of Hartnell's Doctor. And suffice it to say, there's this kind of like disgruntled, muffled sound that he makes when something annoys him.
Right,
and
right,
I heard
right,
it
right.
Probably 12 or 14 just kind of, you know, sound that he makes all throughout the stories. And I'm just like, every time. It got to a point where every time he'd make that noise, like, it just, I was hyper aware of it.
Yeah, he does make that noise a lot in this. And they're kind of just talking over things, and they hear a noise, and I guess the last story had involved the Daleks, I guess?
Shoot, I'd have to go back and look. I'm not 100%
I just assumed because
sure.
she was talking about them.
Yes, that's right.
I would almost assume that would be the last story. And this is the first time, and I mean, I've seen Hartnell in a bunch of pictures. I've seen him in some serials. I've never seen him take his jacket off.
Oh yeah. Right. Because they hear something kind of beyond the interior doors.
Yeah.
And he like holds up his coat, and I think Vicky holds up her shoe, which is like a like the equivalent of a flip flop or a ballet slipper.
Yes.
It's not a boot, right? It's a very flimsy shoe. And he kind of tumbles in. But I found it interesting. There was one point, I think, shortly after he kind of tumbles in with his big old hipster beard. and you can kind of see the opposite wall of the TARDIS, and it actually looks like almost like a bank of old computers behind glass. And I did a complete double take, because the TARDIS that Clara and Ashildur travel off in at the end of last season, it literally was that Hartnell era console room replicated. It had that same layout, that same look. So to be able to put that together, the fact that, you know, 5 decades later, they're paying that much attention to the interior of the TARDIS to keep that continuity, I thought was really awesome.
Yeah. I didn't see the computers, but yes, I do recall the interior of the TARDIS that they went away on looked very much like this. And there you go. That's a great attention to detail thing that Stephen Moffat probably had a hand in. I'm just saying. Yep. You can dislike him, but he did do good things anyway. So they, so I don't know a lot about Steven, but I do know that I really enjoy him.
Yeah, I like how he's, I believe he's a space pilot of some kind, if I remember kind of reading the information on TARDIS Wikia. But at one point he refers to the inside of the TARDIS as a way out design.
Yes.
Thank you, 1965.
And I feel like he calls the doctor Doc, and the doctor's
yes.
like, yeah, oh, you can hang out with us, but you're not calling me Doc. That's ridiculous. And I just love that he's like, I need convincing. Please convince me that, you know, this is...
Yeah.
This is a thing that's happening. I mean, I don't completely understand what's going on. And the
he's not buying the time machine part right away. Well, and I like that Steven needs this convincing. I kind of like how that led into a bit of exposition about what the TARDIS is and what certain things do, even though I know all that kind of stuff already as somebody who's been into Doctor Who for a long time. It was still kind of just a nice establishment of like, nope, this is still what things are. Let's move along.
Yes, but I also liked that the doctor basically is lying to Steven about a bunch of stuff. And as soon as he walks away, Vicky's like, yeah, this is actually what's going on.
Yes.
Which it does not like help his case at all.
No. No, there's not. You know what I did notice, though? There is such an absolute absence of music.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's basically just like beats, like dong and like something like that. There's no wow, yeah, there's like no music. I guess really the only thing you could maybe say is music is the chanting.
Well, right, but that goes to serve the story itself.
Yeah.
Not incidental music the way that we're used to it with modern day television. This was a lot of, especially if there's a scene where a couple of people are creeping along and
oh, there's no music.
Maybe they're taking a long time to do it. There's just silence. And as you know, someone who's very used to watching TV in the 21st century, it's almost startling.
Yeah, there's like no, wow, I didn't really. I mean, I did notice it, but I didn't notice that, wow, huh.
Yeah, a lot of the things I picked up on watching this was a lot of stuff that I'm kind of trying to pay attention to what's probably going on behind the scenes.
Right.
Rather than the action, because you can kind of tell, like, some of these camera moves are really kind of basic, and, you know, they'll switch cameras in the same shot. And it's like, okay, you're clearly on a set. There's three cameras. We're switching from this to this. You know, the camera will only move in so far and stuff like that. But at the same time, they have these like really neat shots. And I think there was one point where a couple of the villagers are looking over the cliff at TARDIS is.
Yes.
And one, they do this really actually pretty decent overhead shot of the TARDIS, which you don't normally see that angle, even in modern Who.
Yeah.
But then looking back up at them, they had, I don't know what they did to make it look like the clouds were going past overhead, but they did it really well. I really was impressed by that.
I did notice that as well. See, and I think going back to the music, sometimes we have to realize that classic Who, especially in this era, didn't have a lot of money, and probably music cost some money back then.
I mean,
that could be one thing that attributed to them not having music. But yeah, I did notice there were a lot of cool camera angles in this, and even I like nice tight shots. So there's like nothing unneeded in a shot, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it does make sense. Totally.
Yeah, I just really... And also, I just really liked the set designs, which I don't know... It was just a note I had. Like, I really liked where the monk was staying. I mean, the TARDIS always looks good. I liked the village. I thought the village looked cool.
Actually, it's funny. I thought the TARDIS, I thought the exterior of the TARDIS looked incredibly shoddy. It looked so rough. It looked so weather-beaten.
Yeah, it did. In the, when it was on the beach, it looked really... It almost looked like someone took sandpaper to it.
Yes. It looked very textured. I feel like what we see now is very crisp.
Yes.
By comparison.
Oh, is it pristine? It's pristine. In mint condition now. There's like nothing wrong with it.
Mint in box.
Yes, definitely mint in blue box for sure.
Oh, that's true.
They kind of venture inward, and the doctor says to stay put, and of course Steven's like, I ain't gonna listen to that guy. He just lied to me twice about the TARDIS. Come on, Vicky, let's go. So they go on their own little adventure, and the doctor, I think this is when he gets to the village.
Yes.
And he just randomly, he goes into some place, hears something, goes outside, and is just immediately caught by this stick. Which, you know what, I think that's the first time that I noticed there was no music, because usually when your main character is being choked with like a stick, you hear like dun dun or something. There was nothing.
Yes.
It was just like, oh, exactly. Matter of fact, he's been caught. Let's go to the next scene.
Yes, that's exactly right.
That was I was just like, wow, that was very anticlimactic when he got caught.
Was when you don't have that music. And of course I'm coming at it from the perspective of being used to music.
Right. And I guess he and the woman who I can't remember her name, the villager woman.
I don't know her name either. I know who you're talking about. And it's the same one to which I have a note of, like, I don't know what it is about sometimes the teeth and the lisp when she's talking, but that's the closest we got to that. Swoon Village, maybe.
Oh, you know what? If we're throwing out the Swoon Cities right now, I assume Vicky's a redhead. Yes, I think she is.
You know, I'm not sure. I've never seen a color picture.
I'm gonna get that's my Swoon City of the week. It's Vicky.
That works for me. Yeah,
I was a little smitten with her. Not gonna lie.
That's her.
Anyhow, the doctor, I guess, somehow convinces this woman he means her no harm, and she's like, oh, here, have some mead, and it's in like a, I want to say like a hollowed out ram's horn or something like that, and he's just like, oh, thank you so much for this mead, this is delightful that you have given me, thank you, and he just keeps thanking her like way too much. I'm like, all right, I think she gets it, dude.
Yeah, he was there's this almost kind of giddiness.
Yes.
To him in that scene. And for what it's worth, just to jump back to Vicky's hair, I've gone and just done a quick Google image search. And while I don't see a very obvious color picture, I see pictures that look like they've been colorized. And if it's not red. It is kind of a reddish auburn.
Perfect. Yep.
So, with you for that.
There we go.
Thank you, Internet.
Thank you, Internet. You've done it again. There was a lot of monologuing to tell plot in this as well.
There was. The whole way that he figures out that it's 1066.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like he's rattling off a paragraph out of a history book.
Basically, yeah. And he's just like, oh, yes, 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 this is very good. It's this time, and this is the year before that. Yes, 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 yes. He says yes a lot.
He does.
And this was the first I noticed the chanting, and it kind of doesn't it sound like we know why it was distorted and weird now, but I just thought that was a nice little thing, like the chanting kind of it slows down a little bit and comes back to regular.
Yeah, it pitched down and then came back up. It totally, like, I was writing down a note when it happened, so I wasn't watching the screen. So when I looked back up at the screen going, wait, what just happened? I went, okay, did that actually happen? Or was I not paying attention?
Yeah.
Did the glitch? You know, there's so many other things that I attribute it to. And I'm like, no, that had to have been a record or something. That totally pitched down and then came back up.
Yeah, and yeah, I just thought that was very... And then he just kind of is like, all right, I got to go. And we get back to Steven and Vicky, who they're just... I can't remember what they're doing. They kind of get the drop on somebody, and he takes something off of the person, and it's a watch.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, this, you're still going to tell me this is 10th century England? And I was like, what is going on right now? This is pretty weird.
I have to think that for 1965, for seeing this for the very first time, that was a pretty smart misdirect.
Yes. So it's almost like, oh, it is like regular time. It's just some weird ploy or something. So
it's like a bad M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah, yes. So the doctor goes into the monastery,
mm-hmm.
and he finds the record player.
Yes.
And he goes, oh, yes, this is what a delightful thing. Yes. And no, he doesn't do that. But I think he takes the needle off the record, goes to turn around and leave, and it's a trap.
Yep.
That has been set by this monk that we haven't even mentioned once. I believe at the beginning of the serial, he's standing on top of the hill looking down at the TARDIS. And then he makes his way down and is listening to the doctor talk about his time machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he traps the doctor and has a good laugh about it. He just thinks it's really funny. And
this was a heck of a laugh.
This serial also has, and I mean, granted, I haven't watched all of the classic Who, but I think it has two weird things that we don't usually see or hear the doctor do. He's like drinking.
True.
And he apparently is sleeping, because in the open of the second episode, the monk apparently feeds him for some reason, and he kind of drops it into where he has him captive.
Yeah.
And he like yells at him to wake up.
Right. And not before we realize that he's making him breakfast on, like, you know, for the 1960s, a modern, you know, portable electric grill. And, you know, I mean, he's literally got obviously not 11th century tech by which he is making this breakfast.
You know, I didn't even pick that up. I just literally thought he was bringing him breakfast, and I was just like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. He's making breakfast. I didn't even pick up that it was what time we were in.
Oh no, it's as if the monk had gone back to the mid 60s and hit a camping goods store.
Yeah, basically. And the monk gets water or whatever he gave the doctor to drink thrown on him.
Yes. Hilarious.
And I feel like at this point, the villagers capture Vicky and Steven.
I think, yes, pretty close to that. Although the only note I have for that is so many close-ups of people being thoughtful, but I have no idea what they're thinking.
That's true. There are, as I did say, there are a lot of tight shots.
And, exactly.
Sometimes they're just tight shots of people not saying anything for 10 seconds. But,
yes.
Oh boy, they're in there. I did like how the dirty villager, I don't really have a name for him. I guess we could call him the Charlie Manson of the villagers. He has the beard and the black hair.
Yes, I know exactly.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't like these guys, man. I don't like them. They give me a bad vibe. And Vicky's like, hey, why don't you, like, shut up now? How does that sound? This isn't going to solve anything. We need to find our friend. And I was like, yeah, she stood up to Charlie Manson.
You know what we need to do based just on that recap right there? We just need to, like, take a Hartnell or a Troughton episode and just retell it. It'll be the same story, but we'll have that kind of dialogue.
I could be fine with that.
And we'll put music in the background because damn, it needs it.
What if the end of this serial had been the doctor taking the dirty villager guy and being like, he's like, oh, I'm going to send him to the late 60s and he won't cause any trouble then.
He actually turns out to be Charles Manson.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Uh-oh.
Whoops. Yeah. Nice one,
Doctor Who would never tell that story.
No.
Oh, he created Charlie Manson. That's great.
That's
so, and Steven's also just kind of done with, that's right. Okay, so they let them go because the woman there is like, hey, this guy came. I thought he was an intruder. He's pretty cool, though, and he went to the monastery. So
yeah, he's just a traveler.
Yeah, so Steven and Vicky go to the monastery, and they talk to the monk, and Steven's just like, this guy is a liar, and I do not like him at all.
Right.
And he's like, just tell us where the doctor is.
Yeah, and the monk is just totally front, and he's like, I have not seen anybody up here. What about the other monks? Oh, they would have told me.
Yeah, there are no other monks.
And no.
I did for some reason liken Steven to Duggan, except for the punching.
Yes, I saw that.
No punching.
Yes, I saw that note.
He's just like, look, you're a liar. Tell me things, or I'll just yell at you some more. Instead of like Duggan, who just would have been like, look, you're a liar. Now I'm going to punch you.
Yes, I'm going to smash Duggan, the patron saint of podcast. Guys.
Yes, I love him so much.
Totally.
That should have been my, he should have been, I think I said that last time, Duggan should have been my wild card for the Time Scoop podcast.
Yeah, well, suffice it to say, he is definitely one of mine now. Shh, don't listen, Mike.
Oh, okay. Hopefully he's not listening.
No.
He's probably listening.
He's probably listening. Hi, Mike. Not long after that, the Vikings arrive.
Yes, evil, Vikings are evil. Vikings with eye patches, even more evil. Because,
well, and my first, go ahead.
Because, and I actually have her name written down, they capture Edith is her name, apparently.
Yes.
But she's alive. I thought they killed her. But she, like, when they find her, her eyes are open and she's not moving. And I'm like, oh man, they killed her. And then she's like, oh wait, I'm fine. It was really weird. I didn't understand it, but whatever.
It is. I didn't either. My first reaction when the very first Viking came over the hill, I went, Odin! No, wait, not Odin.
Yes. Actually, I think her husband, Edith's husband, I think the note I have is Hordor.
Yes. Yes, I saw that note. Totally.
Because he looked exactly like him. I was like, oh, man, Hordor's in this.
Well, I've got to wonder, you know, kind of doing our own little retcon to this episode. It would be, what, maybe 200 years along? Would a shoulder have been maybe hanging out with these guys?
Oh, man. Maybe. That'd be crazy.
Wouldn't it?
That would be nuts.
Hella cray.
It would indeed be cray.
Interesting side note. My folks almost named me Sven.
Sven, really?
Yeah, because the first Viking that you know, I'll call him Odin, calls over, Sven, go and do this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, my folks, his name is Sven. Got a lot of Swedish in my background.
Oh, did not know that. Now we know. Look at that.
Now we know. Exciting, Sven.
I will say that I laughed so hard at the Vikings-villagers fight scene. It was the funniest fight scene I think I've ever seen, and that includes comedies where fight scenes are supposed to be funny. Like,
ooh, wow.
it was like, wait, hit the guy, but don't hit him. We're not sure if these are prop swords or not, but if he hits you, you're dead, but oh, he didn't really hit. Just pretend you fell over and you're dead. It was just so awkward. It was great.
Well, at least nobody shouted, you know, no, actually you missed, or whatever, you know, little kids do. I actually thought the fight scene was actually pretty decent, given the fact that it was, you know, the 60s,
yeah,
all that. But now I get that you think it was hilarious. Would it have been more hilarious if it had been done at twice the speed with Yakety Sax playing in the background?
I think no. I don't think it would have been as funny.
Really? Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, I could try. I don't really have any video editing software. I could try and maybe speed it up and see if it would be funnier. But I don't know. I do remember there's one point where like it's like a tight shot of someone's feet and like a sword's just like meh, like just kind of slowly dragged across their feet, and they're like, ah, it was great. It was just okay. Good times.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Don't think it could get better. At this point, Steven and Vicky are like, look, we got to get in there because this guy is really a liar, because I didn't even tell him the description of the doctor, and then he just rattled off the actual description of the doctor to me. So the doctor has to be in there. So they do all this work to break into the monastery, to find the cell that the doctor's in. And they open up the cell and they're like, doctor? And they pull back the sheets and the doctor's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even leave a note or a text. They didn't even have
or
that technology.
On the wall.
Yes, or anything. And so they're like, great, now we're in here and we don't know where he is. I think that's how episode 2 ends. And the third episode, my first note is, I wish I knew this monk's motives, like, before the third episode ends.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I think for almost an entire episode, my note comprises all of, I feel like the story's losing itself here. It's meandering and I'm getting distracted.
Yeah, I got distracted a little bit towards the third episode, and I think it's at this point that the Charlie Manson villager is injured very badly, and Hordor brings... This is great. This is so fun. Hordor brings Charlie Manson to the monk, and he's like, this guy's really hurt badly. Can you help him? And
oh, yes, yes.
This is when he starts rattling off like, oh, I just gave him some penicillin. I mean, some herbs from, you know, that place over there, and then I wish I could do a blood transfusion, but oh, it's
the guys are, oh, what?
Yeah, so he just is rattling off like all this crazy stuff that is not existent. And my next note, and I actually like really laughed at this too, is the monk's progress chart.
Yep.
How hilarious was he's just like, oh, and he's just like written all this stuff down, and he's like, I better check that off. It's basically like, we've already wasted so much time. We can't have him monologue his plan. So let's just put it on a thing for a little time so everyone can look at it.
Well, yeah, it's like, let's put it on a comic oversized parchment.
Yes.
You know, checklist, you know, do this, kill the Vikings, meet this guy. It's
yes.
Like, okay, that one prop has done more exposition than the past two episodes.
It should have just said, "My diabolical plan."
Right?
And he's like, check. My favorite was he had to put it on a wall to check it off and then immediately rolls it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, I'm glad I hung that on the wall for 2 seconds. And my next note is, I don't even think at this point Steven and Vicky are looking for the doctor. They're just kind of like walking around. They find the TARDIS and they're like, oh, the TARDIS isn't there because the tide came in and we can't see it. And they're just, you know, walking around, just not really looking for him, I thought.
Well, and if I remember right, I think on his progress chart, it actually listed the atomic cannon.
Oh, yes.
And then, again, as I go, wait, atomic cannon?
Yeah, what?
And then as Steven and Vicky are back up at the cliffside and they go, oh, my gosh, the TARDIS isn't there anymore, they find the atomic cannon poorly hidden. Very poorly hidden in the bushes.
Hey, wait a minute. They didn't have automatic weapons in back in 1066. What?
Right.
Vicky, this is not adding up at all. I was just, nope. Oh, man. And I feel like, let's see, I think he ends up tricking the monk, and he's like, that's when he's holding the stick to his back and basically says it's like, yes, a gun. And I, yes, really loved the back and forth banter when the monk is trying to get the doctor into the monk's clothes.
Right.
That whole scene was just,
that was good.
It was just very, very well done. I really liked the dialogue. And the doctor ends up opening the door and it's Vikings. Surprise, Vikings.
That's what they always say in Minneapolis.
Yes. Surprise, Vikings.
That's the only sports joke I've got. Sorry.
That's fine. It was good. I liked it. Thanks. And back into the dungeon the doctor goes. And my next two notes, and there's like two separate things, is they give Hartnell and I believe it's Butters. They give Hartnell and Butterworth two. They're like, all right, here's what you're going to do in these scenes. These guys are going to walk in. You're going to bash them over the heads with these things, and they're just going to break and explode. And it's like, okay, and man, did they ever whack those guys?
Yeah, totally.
I just, you know, sometimes like people don't put force behind it, and it kind of looks like not good. But man, did they ever destroy those dudes? Head bashings all around.
And you get a head bashing, and you get a head bashing.
And I feel... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, that should be our alternate title, Head Bashings All Around.
Oh, Head Bashings All... Yes, there you go. All right, it is done. It is decided. So,
yay.
I think it's around this time that Vicky and Steven come across this like tomb-looking structure.
Mm-hmm.
And they open a door that's on the side of it. That's weird.
As you do with,
yes,
tombs.
Yes. And they walk in and they're in a TARDIS.
Yeah.
So it turns out that the monk is a Time Lord.
He is indeed.
And
a very meddlesome Time Lord.
Yes, the meddling monk, as was the title of episode 2, I believe.
Yeah.
The meddling monk. So he is a Time Lord, and I only have one note about this TARDIS. I kind of feel like you shouldn't be picking up neutron bombs, Steven. Oh, you know what this is? This is a neutron bomb. I'm just going to wave it around. It's not bound to go off and destroy everything because it looks like there's 40 of them here.
Right. Yeah, that's not something I'd be prone to just picking up and waving around, but I don't know, maybe he's got some experience with them. I doubt.
And I believe around this time when the doctor and the monk get back to, like, they are back in scenes together, I feel like I'm really starting to doubt that Time Lords can recognize other Time Lords.
Yeah.
I feel like this was a thing that I was presented with at some point in time and space in this show, that I was made to believe that Time Lords can recognize Time Lords. I can't remember where I picked it up, but I'm very sure it was a thing. And I
are you sure you didn't watch a lot of Highlander at one point?
I have no idea. No, okay, I never I have.
Because the immortals can recognize each other.
No, so, I mean, that, I had never watched Highlander. So, I mean, I feel like we were told this before we were introduced to the Master in Tenet's era. Because that's why he had the that's when we're first, no, that's the second introduction of the Watch. So it changes everything about him. And I feel like that was the same thing that happened the first time they used the Watch. So they wouldn't recognize him as a Time Lord, right?
Well, yeah, because he... Oh, boy. Yeah, there is something about that, I think, both in human nature and in whatever that would be, not Sound of Drums, but The End of Time?
Yeah. No, it's before that. Well, wait. No,
it is before that, right?
So, yeah, I feel like that's, I guess that might be a new Who thing, but I don't know. I'm so confused.
I'm going to say it was not just a new Who thing, but I think it was a Russell T. Davies thing.
Okay.
And I think until we've watched enough classic Who to set a precedent, I think we should assume that they can't recognize each other.
Okay. Because I think this could be simply remedied by finding the first Time Lord he has interaction with. And if the first thing he says is, "Who are you?" then, of course, it's all moot.
Right. Well, and I'm not sure if there is a story earlier than this in terms of the Hartnell years, where he runs into another Time Lord. That's part of the reason I picked this episode, is because it actually kind of expands the Doctor Who mythology a bit.
Right. Because I think before this, the only person he would have technically ran into was his granddaughter.
Well, yeah. I mean, technically, Susan is at least Gallifreyan. I don't know that she's a Time Lady, per se.
Right, right, right. So, huh. All right, then.
Yeah.
There we go. Our weekly discussion about me being confused about the whole Time Lords recognizing other Time Lords thing. And they seem to get kind of chummy after he found out that he was a Time Lord.
A little bit, yeah. And I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's just a, oh my gosh, hey, somebody from my hometown.
Yeah, basically. But he still kind of knew he was up to no good, but it just seemed weird that he was getting all chummy with him.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is, because eventually he does, you know, figure out that, well, as Susan, I mean, not Susan, darn it, Stephen and Vicky come across, you know, like all these relics that he's collected.
Yeah, he's collecting all the stuff. That's the same room that has the neutron bombs in it.
Right, right, yes. And so the monk, you know, is now established, like he will interfere. And later we find out that apparently the Gallifreyans, the Time Lords, have a rule. They have a prime directive, to get all Trekkie on it, of non-interference. And even the Doctor has obviously broken that many times.
Oh, yes, many times. And... I love the villagers kind of put two and two together that the monk is, there's something up with him and he's working with the Vikings, they think.
Right. Yeah. They deduce this on their own, even though it's incorrect. It still serves the ultimate purpose of like, well, hey, he's up to some shady stuff. So let's
go get him.
Let's shut down his operation.
So they chase him and the Vikings out of the monastery.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's kind of like, oh, all right, cool. And he goes into the monk's TARDIS and he takes something. And they're like, Doctor, what is that? And he goes, oh, I'll probably tell you later. I don't know. Which is
starting a long-standing Doctor Who tradition of, don't worry about it, I'll tell you later.
Yes, basically. And I think this is also at the point, it's like, we don't have it was such a weird scene. It almost seemed like some stuff was kind of improvised, where they're all, the monk and Steven and Vicky and the doctor are in the monk's TARDIS, and she's mm-hmm. like, oh, we don't have a time machine anymore. She goes, and he's like, my dear girl, what are you talking about? I mean, we have a time machine, you know. It's just, okay.
Yeah, we parked on the beach.
Yes. We parked it on the beach. I left it there. That's where it was when I left, unless you know. Okay. So she explains, like, the tide came in, and he's like, okay, it doesn't matter. It's the TARDIS. It's going to stay there. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So they take something from the monk's TARDIS, and the doctor writes the monk a sweet letter.
With very nice handwriting, I must
say.
Yeah,
very, very nice handwriting. The letter basically says, like, hey, you tried to basically mess with time, and since you tried to do that and we stopped you, I can't remember what it's actually called. Oh, and while the monk's reading this, he's like, hey, wait a minute. And then he looks inside the TARDIS, and the TARDIS is, it's small inside. It's smaller on the inside.
It totally is. He's taken some sort of dimensional controller or stabilizer,
yeah,
or something, and suddenly we have the TARDIS from Flatline in many ways.
Yes, it's smaller on the inside. And he's like, no, Doctor, no. And he's like, gets super sad and rips up the letter. And
yes,
the TARDIS takes off, and it's like, well, we've just stranded this dude and probably made an enemy of this man. Or this Time Lord.
Yeah.
I think he appears in, like, one more story or two.
I can't remember if he appears in another televised story. I know he's appeared in a couple of books, and I think a couple of audio pieces.
Ah. And that's pretty much the episode. Oh, there was, like, the end. Did you stay and watch the credits?
I did.
It was, like, a weird, like, it shows the stars. And then it shows Steven's face in the stars, and then it shows Vicky's face, and then it shows the doctor's face, and then the credits roll. I thought that was so strange.
That was really bizarre. Like, it took me a moment to go, like, who is that? What are they
What
doing?
Is happening? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've never seen that kind of thing before, especially in end credits.
Yeah.
And it was... Similarly, or relatedly at least, I was actually kind of blown away by how incredibly short the opening theme was.
Oh, yeah, it was very short. Very, very short for...
I'm not used to that at all, either.
So that was The Time Meddler. I really enjoyed it.
I did, too. It kind of suffers from something we point out relatively often with respect to Classic Who. There comes a point where it kind of loses itself, and it could handle being a little bit shorter. I feel like I say that, but it still was nice to be able to go back and kind of see the show when so little of the mythology and the cultural impact and everything, just to see the show when it was so new, really.
Yes.
It wasn't even, the show was not even 2 years old.
No, it
when
wasn't.
This episode aired, you know, and now it's creeping up on what, 53.
Yeah. It's very interesting to go back and just watch how, and yes, it did drag a little bit, but I didn't even mind it, because I think I'm at the point where I'm like, yes, it's going to drag. Just let it do what it's going to do. You can't change it.
That's true. No, you can't change it. That is true.
That Classic Who, he's set in his ways. So, I mean, just let it happen. He's a good guy, I guess.
It's what makes him a classic.
So next time I will be at Gallifrey 1.
And I will be envious.
So we're going to try and do nightly reports live from Gallifrey.
Nice.
I'm bringing my newly acquired laptop and two of my microphones. And I'm going to try and recap with the people I'm with It didn't go as well last year, mainly because we weren't in the actual hotel. So it was like, let's walk back and podcast. And it's like, we just walked like 2.5 miles and now it's like 12:30. I don't want a podcast. So I think it was okay last time. I think this time will be a little better. We're going with a big crew and I think it'll just be fun to hear everyone's stories and stuff like that. So yeah, that's what's going to be up next time. Actually, I think we might as well just say the next episode, and I'll remind you in the Gallifrey Reports, the next episode we're going to actually review is The Tomb of the Cybermen, which is a Patrick Troughton story. I'm very excited because we haven't done a Patrick Troughton story by himself.
Right.
From what I have watched of Patrick Troughton, I really, really enjoy him, and this is going to be exciting.
I'm looking forward to it. I think this is not the introduction of the Cybermen, is it?
I'm not sure if it is or not, but I don't think it is, because I'm very sure one of the lost episodes involves the Cybermen with Hartnell. I mean, we could check real quick.
Yeah, I'd be curious just to know. Maybe it is the second story with the Cybermen.
Let me check right now. The very first appearance of the Cybermen was The Tenth Planet, which is a William Hartnell. Yes.
Yeah, it's one of his last, if I'm not mistaken.
Is the partly missing second serial of the fourth season of Doctor Who.
Okay.
Yes, this is actually Hartnell's last. It's his last serial.
Okay.
Because he regenerates into the missing regeneration scene.
Gotcha.
Well, look at that. So, yeah, we will be reviewing Tomb of the Cybermen next time, which isn't going to be for a little while, but we will have some Gallifrey reports. It'll probably just be a bunch of either drunkenness or sadness that we are not getting new Doctor Who for a year.
I'm looking forward to hearing it regardless, and I am sorry that I will not be there.
We'll get you next year, hopefully.
Yes.
It's a hard week. We've already discussed that it's a hard weekend to do a convention. Well, yeah. But
Valentine's Day weekend, yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It is.
So, you can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Search The Podcastica for both of those. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud and rate and review us as well. That is Podcastica as well. Look for the Gallifrey in writing. You can follow me on Twitter at Sir Pingle, and you can follow Taylor on Twitter.
I have changed my handle, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, if you want to find me now, if you're already following me, it doesn't matter. But if you want to find me now, I have set aside the Bus Buddha moniker and changed both my Twitter and my Instagram to Mountain Rush Garage, which is MTN, abbreviated mountain. So it'd be easier to type Mountain Rush Garage. Just kind of felt like I needed a change. There's, you know, obviously going to be some automotive change in my life, and so that I didn't kind of feel like I could kind of hold on to the bus aspect of that, so I just did a complete change.
Now, did you do what I did with my Team Hate handle and save it?
No, I didn't. No. Didn't even do that.
I
threw caution to the wind.
I still have Team Hate. It's still locked in. I've been thinking about changing it back, but I don't know. I think we're fine right now where we are.
Yeah, I might just grab one of my other email addresses and just be like, okay, let me just hang on to that real quick in case I want it. But I don't know.
You never know.
It might be more. Who knows?
You never know.
Fine. I'll check tomorrow.
Huge shout out to the Y-Axes. Yes. They do our music. You can follow them on Twitter at the Y-Axes, and you can like their Facebook page. Just search the Y-Axes. And head on over to theyaxes.bandcamp.com. They just put out a new song, and I loved it so much I asked if we could use it for the show, and I got a reply, well, don't you want to wait for other songs? and it said, did you see that reply?
No, I missed that.
It said, "Don't you want to wait for other songs?" And it said, "Sonic sunglasses."
So I said,
"Don't tease me with Doctor Who related songs." And then I never got a reply. So I think I might DM them and be like, "Is there really a Sonic sunglasses song? Because we'll wait for that if that's what the case."
We will wait for that.
But their new song is, oh boy, I heard it and I listened to it many times. It's very, very good, and you guys should go check it out. They're also on Spotify. So, yeah, go check that out. Also, head on over to notlg.spreadshirt.com and buy one of our Podcastica shirts. And I guess I'll say here, hopefully in the near future, we will have our new Podcastica logo, which is made by my good friend Rachel. And we have seen the rough draft of it. And I am really pumped about it.
If there's one Doctor Who thing to get excited for, because we've had a bunch of bad news, this is something to get excited about. I am so stoked with how this design is coming together.
I've had her, she did some art for me a while back, and she's the one that did my avatar for my, for Twitter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So she'll randomly do stuff if I ask her to. And this one, I was like, look, I need you on this project. I will send money your way. And it so far it looks really good. I haven't seen anything else from it, but there you go. There's a little teaser for that.
Oh yeah. It's going to be good, folks.
It's going to be real good. So that is about it for us this week. I will talk to you guys in 2 weeks with some special guests that have actually been on Podcastica before. You will hear some somewhat familiar voices, and we will talk to you guys then. See you later.
See ya.
Hey. Okay, so
I could actually still hear you for a while initially.
Oh.
And then I started just singing, like, can you hear me? Can you hear me calling? There's some old 80s tune. I can't remember what it is, but it's in my head now. And this is totally going to wind up on the outro.
Yes.
Okay. And while we do that, let's turn now to, I don't know. I'm trying to fill space here because John is on the internet. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to John Checks His Facts.
Okay. Night of the Living Geek.